We are quickly approaching the end of 2024. And if you have not purchased an investment property yet this year, and it's been one of your goals, I need you to listen very closely. I know many of you live in areas where it's so expensive and investment properties seem impossible. I'm talking about some of the big cities. So LA, New York City, maybe even Seattle, Atlanta, places in Florida, and the list goes on. If you know that where you live is too expensive, I need you to lock in right now. Investing out of state changed my life as somebody living in California. I now invest in Ohio and I'm growing my portfolio. It's something that's possible. You just need the right information and execution. So if that's you, if you want to learn how to invest out of state, go to outofstatemoney.com and there is a free training that'll outline the steps for you and help you understand exactly what it takes. So go to outofstatemoney.com or simply go to the link in the description of this episode.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. This is episode 25, which is crazy. It just hit me that we're a quarter of the way to 100. And it's just been a great journey. So shout out to you all for your support. The purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming Black real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors. Shout out to our show sponsors, Mint Inc. Mint stands for the Minority Interdisciplinary Networking Team. Mint empowers young minority professionals with an interdisciplinary network for learning, collaboration, and the development of entrepreneurial ventures. You can become a member of their network for free at mintinc-usa.com. You can also follow them on Instagram at mintinc_USA. This past week, we had another pair of IG lives that were fire. We had Charles Oglesby the third, aka Todd Millionaire. You can find him on Instagram, todd.capital, and at Partner with Millie. He spoke about investing as a team. Him and his team have 20 doors in Detroit, so he kind of spoke about that. We did some Q&A. That was the best live we've had yet. We had 844 people, which is just crazy. So shout out to him. And then we also had Henry Washington at Independence Realty Group on Instagram on Sunday, and he spoke about creative financing. He was our episode 8 guest. Charles was episode 2. And Henry just spoke about his different financing strategies he's used. So 401k loan, seller financing, and so forth, and just how he structures the finances. And we went into another Q&A, and we had a good group. We had about 200 and change in that one. So very happy with that. Going to continue to go forward with that as long as we're in this quarantine, just to stay engaged and stay connected with everybody. Also, an update on me, my business partner and I were in talks with a lender, and we submitted all of our paperwork to see what we'll get approved for. And the banker pretty much, she said they got flooded with SBA loans, Small Business Association loans, and so they're shifting the priority to that. We don't have any timeline. So at this point, I'm actually just look for other lenders because she didn't really give us any timeline or what we can expect. So definitely we'll keep y'all updated on that. So before we get started, don't forget to leave us a rating, preferably a 5-star review and a comment. It'll help us move up in the rankings and to reach more people. Follow us on Twitter at Bred Podcast, at BRED Podcast. Take a moment, follow us there, tweet throughout the day. It's definitely a different interaction on Twitter. Instagram is cool, but Twitter, you're able to have more conversations with people throughout the day. We're also accepting show sponsorship. So if you have a product or a service and so forth that you think will be useful to the audience, definitely let me know. Send me a DM if you'd like to be a show sponsor. And also we're offering paid Instagram posts. So if you have a course, product, et cetera, that could be valuable to our audience, definitely let us know. There's a link in the show notes where you can submit your ad. And lastly, we have a lot of resources in the show notes in the link tree from our trusted partners. They'll help you on your journey to real estate investment. So things, anything from different real estate strategies, different fundamentals and foundational knowledge you should have, or side hustles, different ways to make money that you can put towards real estate, repairing your credit, all those things. And I don't just promote anyone's products. These are people I trust. These are people who I've vetted, products I've vetted. So definitely feel free to purchase any of those. if you're interested. Lastly, sign up for our email list. By signing up for our email list, you'll receive discounts, additional content, resources in our newsletter, and also buy our merch. We've been selling quite a lot lately, which is awesome. And what excites me the most about it is not only just getting the merch, but we also provide a free home buyer's dictionary from Jacqueline Sims, who's a good friend of mine, and she's also a real estate agent. So not only do you get the merch and you can represent the Black Real Estate Dialogue movement, but you also have some information that you can use for yourself or use for somebody else. So without further ado, let's get into it. I know y'all get a lot out of this episode. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast. Here with me today, I have Justin Smith out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Justin, thank you so much for joining us today, man.
Yeah, thank you, man. Thanks for having me.
For sure, for sure. So the first question is, tell us about what your childhood was like and what you saw or maybe what you didn't see that shaped your view of building wealth.
My childhood was like, I was raised in a two-family household. My father did suffer a stroke by the time I was 8. So I tell people all the time, I really don't remember too much of my childhood prior to me being 8 years old. So my mother really was the breadwinner, the provider for our family. So I look back now, I probably was poor. Didn't really realize it because we always had food in our stomach, you know, always had a roof over our head. So I really didn't realize, you know, that we were probably poor and that my mom was struggling the way she was. And looking back, I remember her, you know, sometimes coming home from work, long days at work, stressed out. But, you know, she's a praying woman, you know, believes in God, you know, that, you know, it would always make a way. God would always provide. So that's some of the things I remember as a childhood. I was like one of the first to, you know, go to college in my household with my immediate family, go to college and get that degree. So that was like a big accomplishment going through education, right? And going through college. In high school, you know, I really didn't take it seriously at all. But I'm pretty competitive. So when it was funny, I start seeing people graduate in like 2002 and I'm still, you know, working like a part-time job at a hospital. I was like, man, it has to be something better, right? Because it was so funny. I used to think, you know, if I made, let's say, $500 a week, that would be enough. You know, that's because, yeah, it's funny. I used to want to do, like, be a computer programmer or something, right? So I figured it out, like, man, if I can just make $500 a week, and this is thinking as, you know, I'm 17, 18 years old, early on in my life, that if I just make $500 a week, I can have a great life. That's enough to my little car note. I can pay rent. You know, I've made it, all right? And obviously, as you grow older and you know, you learn about taxes and the government taking their, you know, 25, 30%, your mentality starts to change, right? And I wasn't really exposed early on, probably from 18 to 23. I wasn't really exposed to the principles of really building wealth, passive income, residual income, because my parents didn't know that. All they knew was work, you know, work 9 to 5, come home, take care of family, and you retire at the age of 65. That's all we were ever taught, that you had to work 40, 50 years of your life and then retire and then relax when you're 65, 70 years old. So that's what I was doing, right? So fast forward, I eventually went to community college, a state school, because I was always conscious of the student loan debt, right? I was always conscious of that, especially seeing my mother provide. So I had to, you know, she helped me with college a little bit, the most she could, but I did take on some student loans. But, you know, community college was a big savings for me, man. I did 2 years there, then transferred to a state school. So I didn't really want to be a financial hardship on my family or even myself in that matter, right? So then it was interesting because I met a young lady in community college, and her uncle worked for, I was dating a young lady in community college, and her uncle, her name was Craig, worked for a big pharma company. So we built a relationship. He used to take me to the the Eagles games, and we used to sit in a skybox, do all those things. And Craig had the biggest house I've ever seen. Mind you, I'm poor, right? Yeah. So I see this, you know, he's a black man living a good life, right? And he was showing me the finer things in life, right? Craig was actually the first one who exposed me to the stock market. You know, I pulled up to Craig's house. You know, I used to have rims and jewelry and watches, you know, making my $500 a week. I was very materialistic, right? So I pulled up to Craig. I remember one time, you know, I pull up, you know, to pick up his niece. Mm-hmm. I was dating. And I just got my new rims, my nice new car, right? So I was feeling good, right? Real flashy. So I pull up and he pulls me. You know, I go in the house and he pulls me, you know, sits me down. He said, "Oh man, nice car. You know, how much those rims cost?" I push my chest out. I'm like, "Yeah, those rims cost like $3,000. You know, mind you, I put it on my credit card. I'm making $500 a week, right?
Yeah.
90% probably, $500 a week. So I'm, you know, feeling myself. $3,000 for those rims. He was like, "Man, let me show you something." So he starts showing me about the stock market, right? He starts showing me about the stock market. Like, "Hey, if you buy this $3,000, could have gave you X amount of shares. You could have had this. If it increased this, you would have made this." You know, and he was telling me this, but it's honestly going in one ear and out the other a little bit. Because I'm still, you know, I'm like 20 years old, right? So I'm like, "Yeah, this he don't know nothing. He knows something." I was listening a little bit because the way he was living. But a lot of times young people, we tell the older people tell us stuff and we don't take it and then take action and apply it, right? You can have a bunch of information, but if you don't ever apply it, it's useless, right? So I didn't apply that at all. I just took it in, heard it. But that was probably my first exposure to how people build wealth was the stock market, right? And then obviously we keep building our relationship, and then later on, probably like a year later, I came across an article of this, you know, this young kid. He was like a wizard in the stock market, like 20 years old or something. He's making all this money, so that intrigued me. So I put two and two together, right? What Craig had told me that year prior and this article, and then I started investing in the stock market a little bit, made money in the stock market. You know, I was invested in the stock market when I went away to college at IUP. I was doing that like day trading, a little bit of money I had. So I thought I was doing good. I'd make a lot of money. I was buying shares of Google at the time, et cetera, right? So that was starting to begin the exposure of, wow, there's other ways to make money outside of working a clock. Here I'm and making thousands of dollars doing a couple of trades of stocks, right? When Google's IPO came out back in, I think it was like 2004 or something. No, a long time ago, like 2000 maybe. You know, Google's IPO, like everybody made money like that, right? Just pushing trades, type it on your computer, right? So I was like, wow, my mind started to change. So fast forward, I end up graduating from Indiana University College. I call Craig up, say, "Hey, Craig, I'm ready, right? You promised me that job," because he had a high position in the company. "You know, promised me that job. I'm ready to get started," right? So he said, "Justin, we have a hiring freeze. You know, they're not hiring nobody." So I'm like, "Okay." And I was like, "You know, how long do these hiring freezes last?" He said, "You know, yeah, no telling, but maybe hopefully 30 days or so. Just follow back up with me in, you know, next month." So of course, me, boom, call him again. "Hey, that hiring freeze lifted." "Hey, not yet, Justin." Bang, follow up again, month three. You know, I'm waiting. I'm working odd jobs at temp jobs just to put money in my pocket. But I didn't go to school for, you know, probably like 6 years of my life, because I went part-time, right, to just be working at temp jobs. So I kept following up. So it was pretty disappointing, man. I remember being pretty depressed in my room because I don't, you know, bust my behind all this time to get this degree. And then it's no job, right? So we're always taught, you know, mind you, we're always taught you go to school, you get that good job. You go to school, get that degree, right?
Yep.
Right, to get that good high paying job. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody never tells you some of those jobs may not expect to make $100,000, might only be $40,000. So now you have this student debt and you have no job or a low paying job. In my case, it was no job. Right? So I started to, I ended up joining a network marketing company called Prepaid Legal. And this was almost phase two of my mind shift. Phase one was the introduction to the stock market. Phase two was introduction to network marketing. And those are companies, you know, you hear them, Prepaid Legal, the Amways, the home-based businesses, right?
Right.
So I made some money there, but the most, when I look back, the true value of those businesses, right, were my mind. My mind started changing, man. They introduced me to the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki,
mm-hmm.
Which is the tale of two fathers, one rich, one poor, right? I don't know whoever, people have not read that book, read that book, right? So a little bit back about that story, you know, the rich dad was an investor, real estate investor, stock market investor, right? The poor dad was a highly educated professional, but he was still poor, right?
Right.
The poor dad had no assets, right? The poor dad was on track to work until he was 65, 70 years old to live the, quote, good life. So when I was reading that book and I'm comparing, I'm pretty smart, right? So when I'm reading that book and I'm like, man, I want to have the good life in my 30s, maybe 40s, not when I'm 60, 70.
Right.
It's a lot more fun to drive that nice car or to travel when you're young and nimble, right? Rather than when you're old and fragile, right? So I just started just thinking, bro, like, yo, it's got to be another way. So, you know, around my neighborhood, I'm probably known as Hustle Man because once I got that, I was on a mission to create passive residual type of income. Yeah, man, at those home-based seminars, you get those guys with suits and ties. Oh, they're talking about how they make it $50,000, $60,000 a month. You know, I'm like, damn, like, how are some people make that type of money? And then some people can make that type of money or not even that per year, right?
Right, right.
Everybody still has the same 24 hours in a day. It's dependent on, it's about what you do with your time. So
for sure.
Yeah, man. So, definitely. You know, I'll stop there. So hopefully that answered that first question.
That did.
But yeah.
That answered it in great detail, man. I appreciate that breakdown. It's cool to hear kind of the evolution of your mindset through those different experiences, which leads perfectly into the next question. So from all those experiences, why did you decide to pursue real estate as your path to building wealth?
Yeah, definitely. So real estate wasn't the first channel, right? Prior to real estate, I had failed business ventures, quite a few. Again, man, I was never scared to try. But two that I'm going to talk about that failed prior to me really taking real estate seriously was one, a business called Frugal Deal. This was a business similar to Groupon, except my key differentiator was I was able to do the deals on a weekly basis, and I was giving my customers, my business customers, more visibility on my website at a cheaper price, right? So I thought that was going to be my ticket, man, back in 2010, I had that business going. 2009, 2010, right? I had markets open up in New York, Florida. I had someone who wanted to open up a business in Nigeria. I got flown out there to Lagos, Nigeria to do a presentation. So I was feeling good. I raised capital from investors. I had, in the day that I had a launch party in New York, my business, the website, crashed. So I had all these sales, you know, basically I didn't have the right infrastructure. In hindsight, I didn't know what I was doing. You know, I had a great idea, but the engine wasn't strong enough to handle the volume of the sales that were coming in. Mm-hmm. My email servers were bad. You know what I mean? My mailing list, it was just a disaster waiting to happen. Right. And it just happened the day of my launch party. You know, I had press coming and all that, you know, because it was getting a lot of buzz, right? It was getting a lot of buzz, right? Because it was new back then. So I had to hold my head high, go to New York, smile, you know, do the giveaways, and I had to pay back thousands of dollars to customers and businesses, right? Because their money was being held. The PayPal system I was using never released that money. So. Wow. I ruined some relationships. You know, I lost a lot of money, man. A lot of money. You know, people that were with me lost a lot of money. It was really, you're talking about being depressed. You know, I had left my job too, right? Because at the time, 2011, I actually got fired. I didn't leave. I got fired because I wasn't producing because my focus was really on growing Frugal Deal at the time, right? So I was, you know, would do my business when I wasn't supposed to. So, end up getting fired. So here I am, fired, you know, no business, no job, right? So I basically pivoted to partner with this programmer to launch an online ordering business, right, called Express Menus. Basically, that was similar to Grubhub. Express Menus, that business, I would provide online ordering service, make the business their own website, their own online ordering platform, et cetera, right? Fast forward, that business was going good for about, I would say about 2 years, right? I'm getting business, boom, 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 boom. Here comes Grubhub. Here comes Seamless. Here comes all these other online ordering platforms with just more advertising dollars, more sales reps, right? And just start taking business. So my residual, you know, I had the residual on that because mind you, my mind was the residual. I had my residual go from probably about $7,000 a month, automatically a month. So I would charge $55 a month, and I would also charge for a setup fee. So my setup fee on like $350 to $500. So I was getting money with that, and also charging that monthly residual. So I was getting about on average $7,000 a month, and I also was getting the setup fees. So I was doing okay, right? All that, boom. Start tanking, start losing clients left and right, left and right, left and right. So I seen the writing on the wall with that business. So I was like, man, Justin, you got to do two things. Are you going to go back and get a job? Or are you going to give this real estate thing a shot? You see, I was truly first introduced to real estate in probably about 2009 when I did my first wholesale deal. It was an assignment deal where I made about $13,000.
Yep.
Right. Had a property under contract for 97, flipped it for 110. However, remember in 2009, the mortgage industry took a crash. Right.
Yep.
Hence me doing all these other businesses from 2009 to 2000, you know, about 12, 13. Right.
Right.
My cash buyers weren't cash buyers. The economy was bad back in 2009. Right. So that was my first little exposure to real estate. Like, I'm like, man, you can make this amount of money just flipping a piece of paper, right? So I basically went back to what I knew did work because I did it one time, but I wasn't consistent. You know, I got discouraged. You know, I'm sending out mailers and I'm not getting no more wholesale deals. So I called a gentleman up, you know, fast forwarding back, you know, to 2013. I called a gentleman up by the name of Mr. Ron. He's an older gentleman that I knew did real estate. I didn't know what level he did, but I knew he was buying properties, right? Because it was interesting. One thing that actually made me call him, I remember him losing his job. He was in the healthcare field. Like I think he did like a traveling type of nurse, right? He lost his job and this man goes out and buys a drop top Jaguar. And I was like, yo, you lost your job. Like, how can you do that? And something very key he said to me is like, this nursing money was just basically extra money. Like, his lifestyle depended on all his rental properties that he had. And I'm like, damn. Remember, passive residual income. What other way to build passive residual income than real estate? So we go for a ride. I call him up. We go for a ride. I'm like, listen, you know, I want to invest in real estate. I'm serious. He's like, you serious? Don't waste my time. Are you serious? I was like, yes, I'm serious. He didn't know I was on my last dime. I was desperate as hell. I just lost God knows how much money. And I'm either going to go back to a job or, mind you, I've been out of work for 2 years at this point. I ain't trying to go back, right? So I just spent my last little bit of money. We go to Philadelphia. He took me around to like a few properties. The first two was a no-go. The third one was, I guess, like a cosmetic rehab. Paint, update the kitchen, cosmetic rehab. So we got that one. Again, I didn't have enough money to do the whole purchase and renovation. So I ended up partnering with my buddy Earl. He's another ambitious guy around the way. So we got this property for $22,000. I think we put in like another $25,000, $27,000 into it. Long story short, we profited after realtor fees, expenses, seller's commission. We profited $34,000. We split that two ways, 17 for him, 17 for me, right? Yeah. So we got our initial principal investment out back, right? And $17,000. Man, brother, rest is history.
Wow.
Rest is history, right? So from that point on, I made that money. So then I found a deal. A duplex I got for $12,000, had another flip going. So I was simultaneously doing flips and renovations, you know, at the same time. You know, I was leveraging private capital at the time to do those deals.
Got it. So it's a very interesting theme I'm picking up here as we kind of get into the real estate side of things. One, you're definitely a serial entrepreneur. And I think the seed that was planted in you early just to find that, passive income, that residual income, you know, you just kept trying different things and you weren't afraid to start over and try the next thing. And it seems like that all puts you on the path to real estate. So I think that's very powerful that you just continue to try different things until something worked. So I think that's very, very, it's very good. Where did it go from like flipping? How did things develop from there?
Yeah. So when I I needed money to flip. So it was funny, man. I was some of the things I used to do when I look back in 2013, you know, that was honestly embarrassed to talk about then. I can talk about now that I don't gotta do that no more. I used to rent out my house. Via Airbnb. You know, my friends thought I was crazy. They thought I was crazy. Like, you want to let strangers live in your house? And I was dating at the time, right? I was single. I wasn't married. And I was dating. So I was staying with my girlfriends, stay with my girlfriends. They knew what I was doing, you know. So I would stay with them, rent out my house, and I was dating someone out of state at the time, so it just made sense to me. Like, listen, I'm paying this mortgage, why not Airbnb it? And why I'm away for a week or 2 weeks, whatever the case may be, right? So I would couch surf, I would rent out my house, and again, that passive income, right? Here I am, I already have this asset, right, which is truly a liability. Because it's only a true asset if it's producing income. One house alone is not an asset. It's a liability. The game is multiple houses,
right?
That produce income. That's a true asset. So that Airbnb, that saved me, man, back then. So I was on average making about $1,000 doing Airbnb from the rental standpoint. So when I start flipping, I was always remembered about that cash flow. right? When you flip and you sell, you still got to pay capital gains tax. So if you're selling within a year, you're paying that 25% capital gains tax.
Wow.
Right? Right? So versus rental, that rental income, you're still getting that cash flow. You still have that equity. And if you want to tap into that equity, all you do is refi and it's no capital gains tax.
Right.
Right? Right? Wouldn't you rather have your whole 50 than 35,000? You get what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a no-brainer.
It's no-brainer. In the cash flow.
Right.
Right? And you get to take advantage of the appreciation.
Yep.
So that house that might be worth 80,000 now, right, 6 years later, is worth 150.
Right.
So it just made sense to me. And remember, my mentor, Mr. Ron, I seen what he did. This guy loses $100,000 job and it doesn't faze him.
Right.
So I always looked at having multiple streams of income. Right?
Yeah.
So I mean that's the transition. Like,
absolutely.
You know, flipping can be good, but I think real estate is meant to be held. Right? Because if you have, let's say 50 properties, right, paying you, you know, $1,000 a month, or, you know, hell, even if you want to say $500 a month, you know, 50 properties, $500 a month, that's $25,000 a month, and you could be on the beach somewhere.
Right.
That's the game.
Definitely.
That's the game, man. So that's what, you know, spearheaded that transition.
Absolutely. Yeah. So what did it look like going from flipping to buying and holding?
What did it look like?
Yeah. So what was like your first buy and hold deal? What did that look like?
It was a duplex, and it was a duplex that I got for $12,000. It was interesting. My wife, who is now, we were dating at the time. And, you know, mind you, I was broke then. So I go to her and I was like, hey, I got this deal. It's $12,000. Like, do you want to go in? So she said, yeah, I want in. And then it go time to sign the deal, you know. And again, she never did real estate. So she was a little nervous, and rightfully so, right? And she must have, what she probably did was go back to her family and friends, right, and say, oh, the guy I'm dating, because we were only probably like 3 weeks in, right?
You're bold.
And he wants me to go half with him. And of course, their mom and friends are probably like, what? You're crazy. Yeah, you've been holding on to your money, blah, blah, blah. So she basically backed out on me, right?
Yeah.
She backed out on me on that deal. So I ended up doing that whole deal myself, because look, it was $12,000 deal. This property's worth like $180,000 right now. I did that deal all on cash. I used some of the profits from the flips I were doing, right? And did rehab one unit at a time in that duplex. So I got that duplex for, for 12, I think I might've put like, you know, between 45, 50,000 into it for the renovations, right? And that was all in, probably like 52,000 all in, right. On that rehab. About 52. So I did that all cash, because I wasn't really conscious of hard money loans back then, man. And I had my private capital investors, you know, but I'm leveraging them on the flips, not on the buy and holds, right? I'm just putting that money, flipping it back in to my duplex. So that duplex, man, gives us, you know, $1,700. And I mean, we had great tenants, and then was one of our first rental properties. And to this day, you know, we have grown that portfolio.
For sure. So I know back then, your girlfriend at the time and now wife, she kind of backed out. But what did she think of? What did she think of everything now?
What's her perspective now? Now my wife is a beast.
Yeah.
Listen, she has been so instrumental in helping to build this massive portfolio.
Yeah.
Her first property, not only does she put her some of her time, but also her capital. Right.
Right.
So my wife, you know, she works. Has a job. I work, have a business in terms of I'm a GC. So how we do it right now is most of our rental portfolio is debt free. So wow. Basically 30% of our portfolio has mortgages, 70% free and clear, 30% have mortgages. And the way we were able to do that is leveraging our biggest investor, our business and our job, right? Again, my wife has a good job. She makes this money and she invests to help buy our first properties cash, right? And then, you know, our method is we buy one free and clear, and sometimes depending on the equity we have in it, we may do a refi and then buy two straight cash, no mortgages.
Right.
Doing that is about a 33% ratio.
Right.
Right. You buy one, two free and clear. Buy one straight cash, two and free and clear. Bang. That's how we've been growing this thing, man. And again, we use our jobs as our invest to spearhead these investments. Yeah, I would not be able to grow this portfolio without having a spouse, someone like my wife on board that has bought in, right?
Right.
And I tell people all the time, you get that first passive income check, you know, and she got her first taste. Now she like, what are we doing now? She want to buy more. I'm like, yo, we okay. She like, now she want to keep going because it goes from one to two to three to four. Nonstop, man. And it's great satisfaction. Another thing that my about my wife, she loves helping people, right? So when we're able to, it's funny, man. When I first started to rehab, I would, you know, I'm pretty cheap. Hey, I had a business called Frugal Deal. right. So listen, I had a business called Frugal Deal. So listen, I'm cheap, all right? So when I first started with my renovations, man, you know, I wasn't doing whole gut outs, right? I would, you know, leave the old doors. I was leaving the old trim, leave the old baseboards. You see what I'm saying? And I'm thinking like, man, it's a cosmetic rehab. I'm just going to put some paint, I'm leaving the kitchen, the bath, I'm leaving everything, right? My earlier rehabs, right? So she come along and, you know, she got a different eye and she makes me do better quality work, right? Good. So now the people, when I say we were ever homeless, we will always have good quality to go into, that, you know, that's coming from my wife, the you know, help me put out a better product and push me to put out a better product. So not only is she instrumental again with putting up her capital, but also, you know, helping me, giving me feedback on, hey, you should gut this kitchen out or you should do this to make a good quality living for people.
For sure. Yeah. For sure.
Because good housing conditions, that breeds a good environment for the tenants, man. You know, these tenants have kids and families, you know, so we like to give them a good quality product.
For sure. For sure. Where does the portfolio stand now? About how many units are y'all at these days?
Yeah, I would say people ask me that question, you know, I need more. You know, it's good amount though.
I feel you. Yeah. So you had a post that went viral the last week actually, and I saw it. I forgot what page I saw it on, but I reposted it on my page, and I got like probably 1,200-1,300 likes. And I'm like, I got to get this guy on the podcast. And you know, the headline was, "Brother buys 9 properties for his daughter before age 2." So can you talk? Can you talk more about that and just building that legacy for her?
Yeah, absolutely, man. So when my daughter's not 2 yet, should be 2 in May. Wow, time is flying.
It grows so fast, huh?
Yeah, it's flying, man. So when we had her in 2018, we thought like, man, wouldn't it be nice? Because at that point, you know, we achieved financial freedom. Right. So everything else after that is icing on the cake. Right. So let's set our daughter up for wealth. Right. So what we did, we opened up an LLC, you know, based on her name, and also are earmarking each property, you know, so each of the properties that we are purchasing, you know, under her LLC, we're earmarking for her. Hence, you know, father buys 9 properties. So between the period from the time that she was born to now, you know, those 9 properties in her name, in her business name, are going to be for her, and they're all earmarked under her name.
Wow, that's so powerful. I mean, That's so powerful. I don't think I've ever heard of something like that in our community, but I think it's amazing because, you know, usually we hear about the 529 for college savings or setting up this account or that account, but to have like properties and cash flow waiting for a child for when she gets older, I mean, that's I think that's incredible. I think that's incredible. Yeah. How did y'all determine that that's what she wanted to do as opposed to maybe some of the more traditional routes?
Well, listen, here's the thing. If she doesn't want to have this empire, this is going to be us. but we're going to expose her and start her at a young age about the assets versus liabilities, mm-hmm. and have these charities, you know, start showing these houses. These are assets. These produce X amount of dollars, right? Because if people and our children are taught at a young age that you don't always have to trade time for dollars, right? You know, we'll probably have a lot more people investing. And I tell people all the time, you don't have to do real estate investing full time. I do this full time because I'm passionate about it. It's not work for me. I can do this all day. It's nothing for me, right? It's nothing. It's like, it's almost like an addiction almost.
Yeah.
And it's not even about the money anymore. I really get a high off turning an ugly house that looks like crap into something that is beautiful for people, providing great living conditions for people, you know, and I invest in urban communities, you know, and me and my wife, we want to provide good housing for people that may look like us, right? Like good housing, yeah. like, you know, like it's like if you see some of these rehabs, you know, people say to me all the time, like, man, you doing all that in this area? You doing all that in this area? Yeah, I'm doing all that in this area. Yep. You know, that's one, our way of giving back. And two is just doing right by people, man. And, you know, we have very low tenant turnover. You know, I did a post today that, you know, probably we were just thinking about this. Since we've been building this portfolio, we've had two people move out. And that's one relocated out of state. You know, they don't want to move out on their own. They're relocating.
Yeah.
And no evictions.
Wow. That's incredible. That's incredible. I mean, I really love that you focus on investing in urban communities and making sure they have good housing because as we all know, there's a lot of slumlords out there, right? And people who just throw something together and think that, you know, we people who are working class people or just trying to get by don't want or don't deserve good quality housing. But I mean, it works. You know, you haven't had many evictions, tenants stay there, they're happy. And I think that's very powerful.
Yeah, man. I have a hashtag called Death to Slumlords. I've been going with that the past 6 years, Death to Slumlords, since I ever started. Death to Slumlords, man. Because, I mean, it's crazy, man. Like, real estate investors, you know, we can make a good amount of money in this profession. And then you have landlords that still give horrible products.
Yeah,
you don't do people like that, man. So I'm pretty passionate about that.
For sure, for sure. So can you talk more about becoming a GC and why you decided to take that on?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So remember, I said back in 2013, I was doing that first flip, and I was dating someone that was, you know, in a different state, right? Yeah. So I hired a friend that I knew that was a GC, and a project, knowing what I know now, a project that probably should have took 4 weeks, he took 3 months on it.
Yeah.
Like I'm a GC now, and I literally can get through 4 or 5 rehabs in 10 weeks. Right. This guy has a cosmetic rehab that took in almost 3 months, right?
Right.
So when I used to come back from New York to check on the progress of the property, I used to just see no guys there working. Or if they were, you know, the GC who I hired, he was just sitting there with his arms crossed. There was nothing really going on.
Right.
So, and he probably knew, he probably did this, slow rolled my project. He was probably working on other projects. He was, hey, this guy's not out of state. You know, I could tell him anything. I'm a new investor at the time, right? Probably took advantage. I probably overpaid, took longer. So, again, I'm a smart guy. I used to see what he was doing. He wasn't doing any work. He was just managing people. Mm-hmm. And I said to self, you can do that. You're like, if you open up these other businesses, you can open up a construction company. So I've been with the same group of guys. I built my construction team. you know, referrals, you know, visiting job sites, blah, 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 right? And I had built my construction team. I got the loyalty, you know. Yeah, and same crew for since 2014, man. Wow. And again, I have almost have a dream job. Like, I love doing rehabs. So not only I can do rehabs for other people, I can also keep doing rehabs for myself. So it's a dream. It's a blessing, man.
I love it. So I love
that's
it.
What made me, yeah, that's what made me start a construction company. Me being burned, being overpaid, long timelines, and just unprofessional contractors made me become a GC. And, you know, and I tell people, my clients all the time, I'm not your average general contractor by any means.
Yeah.
I'm very experienced. You know, I come from a white collar, you know, type of corporate job, but now I'm in a blue collar industry. So,
right.
Yeah. So it's just my clients, it's just a different experience when they work with me.
For sure. I love it. I love it. I mean, it's the consistent theme that I'm really seeing in throughout this whole conversation is that you turn every experience into another opportunity. So whether it's good, whether it's bad, you figured out throughout your lifetime what you can learn from it and how you can use it to grow yourself, to grow your business. So, you know, you have bad contractors, you're like, all right, I'll do it myself. I'll become a GC and I'll become better than what I've experienced. So I think that's very cool. Definitely, man.
You can't ever stop learning in life, man. You got to always keep learning. There's always people, you know, I don't know it all. Like, it's people in this world of real estate, I'm still a small fish.
Yeah.
But the crazy thing about what I tell people, you could be a small fish and make millions.
Right.
Small fish and make millions.
Definitely. So. Definitely. So what does the future look like? What do you hope to do? Do you have any other entrepreneurial ventures and where do you hope to take the your business?
Yeah, man. So what I'm doing now, I'm going to keep building my portfolio for, you know, our family. I'm never going to stop with that. But I'm also going to be doing more. I'm launching a company called Day with Jay, right? So daywithjay.com, which basically is going to be a coaching platform where I can help the masses learn what traditional education never taught us, right? Yeah, so that's what I'm going to be doing. That's my next goal. Again, nice. It's daywithjay.com. People can find out more. It's going to be coming soon. I'm doing little tweaks during this quarantine, but that's the next thing, man. Trying to find out ways where I can help more people learn what college and school damn sure ain't going to teach us.
For sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the next thing on my plate. Yeah.
Definitely. And, you know, of course, you've learned so many lessons throughout your business journey as an entrepreneur, as a real estate investor. And, of course, you know, a lot of people are interested in becoming real estate investors and getting into real estate. What would be some tips that you would share with someone who wants to get started, but maybe they don't know where to start, or maybe they're just, you know, kind of scared and nervous and they're like, oh, you know, what if I lose everything? What would you say to somebody like that?
Yeah. So when I'm asked that question, I take people back to almost how I started, right? And how I started was, one, you want to evaluate your current financial situation, okay? That's what I did. I evaluate my financial situation, right? What I mean by that is, if you have, let's say you have $5,000 a month coming in, you know, as a household income, you know, with $60,000 a year, how can you reduce your expenses? Reduce, right? And I tell people all the time, you might just have to sacrifice temporarily to change your life forever. Can that $60,000 lifestyle go to 40, go to 35? Get what I'm saying?
Yep.
That's one, right? Two, find ways to, now you reduce your lifestyle, right? Now, can you find a way to make money? You know, whether you're doing side jobs temporarily, right? Because you need some type of capital, right, to get started in real estate, right?
Yep.
Even if you're doing wholesaling, you need some type of capital to do marketing to find those deals, right? That's the real, okay? So that's two. Find ways to make more money, you know, whether it was Uber and doing notary, whatever the case. I did all types of hustles, you know, to try to increase money, reduce my expenses, make money. That's the second thing I did. Three, make sure your credit, if your credit is bad, start working on your credit because you're going to need an exit strategy, right? You can't, you don't want to buy these properties and get stuck, have all your cash tied up all the time and not being able to refi back out. So three is credit. People can improve their credit. Far too often I meet people that just, you know, they got bad credit and don't even try to improve it. And they go year after year after year with bad credit. You have to leverage occasionally, you know, you have to leverage OPM, other people's money, right? Four is start to educate yourself, you know, get a mentor, you know. It's crazy how many people I come across that don't want to pay for mentorship. You know, hell, go to YouTube. You know, go somewhere. Start educating yourself. You don't jump into this thing blind. Even I had a mentor, you know, when I first started. Because one bad move in this game can set you back for years. It can take you 3, 4, 5 years. One good move can catapult you, right?
Yep.
So it's amazing how I meet people that, you know, have, and I think the college system, they are the best marketers ever because they got people writing essays and all type of things, you know, begging to spend their $40,000, $50,000 to get in these universities. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen. You know, and they're hammering kids with these high tuitions with no guarantees for a job. Meanwhile, you have people that are truly experts, you know, in this real estate stuff. You know, I consider myself an expert in this field at this point. You know, that can help you change not only your life, but your family's life for generations. That's the game, man. And that's it. So if you're a new person, you're looking to get started, you know, identify someone that is actively doing and living what they're teaching. And the great thing about social media, Samuel, it leaves receipts. You know, it leaves receipts. You know, if you make sure your mentor is active, you know, and that's one of the things why I try to keep posting on social media. And I've been posting since 2013. You're talking to me right now, 2020. But brother, I've been saying the same thing, preaching the same gospel since 2013.
For sure. For sure. And where can people find you if they want to learn more about what you're doing, connect with you? Where's the best place to find you?
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram. I'm very active on Instagram at J-E-S, capital, C-A-P-P-I-T-A-L, investments. So you can find me on Instagram there. Also, again, with that that real estate course and life course that I want to be launching, is Day With J. So it's Day With is WITJJAY.com. DayWithJ.com. So you can find me there.
For sure. We'll have that in the show notes. And yeah, as soon as things launch, let me know. We'll definitely push that out to our audience. Get as much visibility for that as possible. But man, this was. I'm pumped up right now. You know, that's a very, very inspiring interview just to see where you came from, you know, and just how much resilience you had, you know, with every redirection, everything that didn't work out. It just pushed you to the next step, ultimately to where you are now and where you're growing and where your family's going in the future. So I really appreciate you coming on, man.
Okay, I appreciate you, man.
For sure, for sure. Everyone, thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast. You can find us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue and also on Twitter at Bread Podcasts, at BRED Podcasts. Look forward to talking to you all soon.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.